This news brief brought to you by the International News Net.
U.S. officials say there's growing evidence Pakistan's ISI spy agency encouraged a Pakistani militant group, the Haqqani Network, to carry out last week's attack on the U.S. Embassy and NATO headquarters in Kabul. A U.S. Senate committee voted this week to make $1 billion in U.S. aid to flood-ravaged Pakistan, conditional on a crackdown on militant groups. Former Afghan President Burhanuddin Rabbani was killed Tuesday in a suicide bombing. A survivor of the attack, an aide to the former president, said Rabbani was lured to his death by the bomber, who claimed he was representing a mysterious figure mediating between the government and the Taliban's senior leadership. NATO leaders Wednesday authorized a 90-day extension of the alliance's mission in Libya. NATO began enforcement of a four-month no-fly zone over Libya in March. NATO fighter jets have flown more than 20,000 sorties over Libya, dropping thousands of bombs to take out Muammar Gaddafi's command centers and military materiel. Hundreds of civilians have been reported killed. Amnesty International says it has uncovered evidence that rebel forces in Libya have committed gross human rights abuses, some amounting to war crimes. The rights group also reveals the Western media deliberately ignored or covered up the widespread atrocities. In a report released Tuesday, Amnesty accuses the rebels of unlawful killings, arbitrary arrests, and widespread torture of civilians, mostly black foreigners. The report also confirms widely held concerns about the NTC's ability to unite the country and oversee a peaceful transition. Many attacks are focused on blacks suspected of being sympathetic to ousted dictator Muammar Gaddafi. The report states angry groups of supporters of the February 17th revolution shot, hanged, and lynched dozens of captured soldiers and suspected foreign mercenaries, and did so with total impunity. Gaddafi's supporters have accused NATO of killing up to 800 civilians. Amnesty says both the NTC and Gaddafi's forces are to blame. U.S. combat troops in Iraq may be heading to the exits, but the U.S. government's enormously expensive intervention there is hardly coming to an end. U.S. officials are planning to expand the gargantuan embassy in Baghdad, a heavily fortified, self-contained compound the size of Vatican City, by far the largest embassy the world has ever seen. Inside its high walls, guard towers and machine gun emplacements ring not just the embassy itself, but more than 20 other buildings. The number of personnel under the authority of the U.S. ambassador will swell from 8,000 to about 16,000.
More details on these stories, visit innworldreport.net.
You are listening to the Rule of Law Radio Network at ruleoflawradio.com. Live free speech talk radio at its best.
Hi, welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. We're back. It's the 15th of November, 2011. I've had a busy couple of weeks. I've been on Talkback Radio in Sydney every day for the last few days. I'll be on tomorrow again. I'll be bringing you in the second half of tonight's show a clip from the recording we did this morning in relation to the Occupy Sydney movement. And that's going to be quite important and explosive revelations there, I think, in relation to the way in which the Occupy movement seems to have been co-opted and really steered quite aggressively in one particular direction, which, you know, unfortunately is not reflective of what a truly inclusive popular movement should be. I mean, I've been through a lot of pendulum swings on how I view the Occupy movement, and I'm still, like I say, I'm always open to new information, but we'll get a bit more into that shortly. Now, I've got on the line Josh Jackson back in Sydney. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you very much, Harold. Thank you very much, listeners.
It's been a while since you've been on. You've, of course, have been gallivanting around the world.
I have. I was lucky enough to head down to the Amalfi Coast in Italy and have a look at that beautiful part of the world. It really is stunning. It it's up there with the Great Ocean Road and these sort of really winding cliff-top roads. It's just stunning, and it's interesting to see how the rest of the world is doing, because we always hear about Europe in great trouble and the financial systems around the world are crumbling. But really, I saw none of this thing. I mean, the tourist industry there were so many tourists that couldn't believe it in Italy. The day-to-day shops, the mum and dad pops, shop, they seem to be doing all right. I think it's the big banks that collude and sell dodgy derivatives, end up going broke and then blaming the economy and making them bail them out with taxpayer funding. I think it's more of that case than really and then them driving out the mom and pop stores, not really the economy, you know.
And then, of course, the real pain comes when the countries declare austerity measures.
Yeah,
and
then they tax the hell out of the mom and pop stores.
Taxes go up. Yeah. And, of course, anyone who's receiving government benefits of any kind, they get less money. Anyone who works for the government gets less money. Taxes go up. People just get squeezed. I mean, were you there during the – there's been a change of power in Italy over the last few days. Of course, Berlusconi has gone. Apparently, the new head honcho over there is actually former advisor to Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it really doesn't surprise me. Goldman Sachs is the ultimate in revolving doors. Mm. What can you say? You just look at Berlusconi. He looks like I hate to go on looks, but, all these politicians, they're so slimy and slippery. And this new guy is just as slimy and slippery as the rest of them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, look, Josh, I want to... I had a revelation.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
I've discovered something amazing. Right. And what this is about the essence of what the climate change lobby, those who, and there are many of them, and let's not diminish their significance.
No.
Because they are very, very dominant. I don't know whether they are the majority or not. It changes from poll to poll, and it really depends sometimes on how you address the question, what sort of feedback you get. But
and semantics.
Semantics, yeah. But the thing I want to hone in on today is this concept of the question about climate change is wrapped in, it's folded into some questions about how society should be managed, and the polar opposites that are presented to us are an extremely individualistic, aggressive capitalist system which doesn't care for the poor, blames people for their own failures and has no social safety net, versus a communitarian worldview that wants to have evenly distributed wealth and wants to, what are the words? I mean, let me just actually give you the quote that I was actually trying to paraphrase here from Naomi Klein. And I want to talk about this article and I want to talk about the analysis of the article. Naomi Klein has written a book called Capitalism Versus the Climate, which was analyzed brilliantly by Joanne Nova, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago. Here's the key quote from the article. Those with strong egalitarian and communitarian worldviews, marked by an inclination toward collective action and social justice, concern about inequality and suspicion of corporate power, overwhelmingly accept the scientific consensus on climate change. On the other hand, those with strong hierarchical and individualistic worldviews, marked by opposition to government assistance for the poor and minorities, strong support for industry, and a belief that we all get what we deserve, overwhelmingly reject the scientific consensus. Wow, what a sentence. Look, before I continue to give my views on this, What do you make of that, Josh?
Well, there's a few things that that stood out to me straight away, and this was the hierarchical and individualistic worldview little section of it. So on the other hand, those were strong hierarchical and individualistic worldviews marked, you know, I mean, first of all, I would really think that hierarchical and individualistic are total opposites. I mean, if you're an individualist, you really don't believe in a hierarchy. The hierarchy fits more in the communitarian camp.
I have no idea what she's talking about when she conflates hierarchical and individualist. I just that blows my mind. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, because you can't figure it out, right? She says hierarchical and individualistic worldview. So is she saying there's two camps there, or is she saying they're one and the same? And that's quite interesting. I mean, I actually like a lot of Naomi Klein's work.
Well, she wrote The Shock Doctrine. She talked about disaster capitalism, which I agreed with.
Yep, and there was just, you know, but the problem I see is this whole notion of capitalism, which has been totally screwed with because, I mean, what is capitalism? Is capitalism the notion that we have this state that runs and controls how the market runs, and let's say you want to have a shop, you want to hire someone, but then the state comes in and says, no, you can't hire someone unless you do this, 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 and this, plus you have to do this and this, plus we tax you this, this, and this, and then you have to do it, and you end up going, oh, well, I'm not going to hire anyone, I have to shut my business. I mean, that's not capital, that's not a free market.
But absolutely.
What we have now is this sort of fascistic control grid where these major corporations, which have a weird structure anyway, I mean, to have the same right as a living human being, I mean, come off it. You know, they're a corporation, they're a faceless corporation. They can't get sued, like the people running these things, because, you know, no, it's the entity that gets sued. So no one has any responsibility. This is all in this statist paradigm of capitalism, and I think, you know, it's a real shame that these sort of get conflated, because we have to start talking about what free market capitalism, true free market, and fascistic statist capitalism. I mean, they're two totally different ball games, and yeah, they just all get thrown in with our capitalism.
Which, of course, is sometimes called crony capitalism, which is just a concentration of power. It's really just a mafia-style system where people just are – I mean, to take the Murdoch empire, you know, that's crony capitalism to the nth degree. You've got a family who just owns all the media in dozens of countries, and of course, they engage in semi-criminal activities too. We don't know what else they do, but we do know that they spy on people, and, you know, they distort information to support they've got a handle in government, and they've got an eye to their own power and influence, and
set up, you know, most major corporations will lobby the government, are very comfortable in government, in the corridors of power.
Absolutely.
And they'll lobby the government like crazy to set up major roadblocks for entry into the field that they're in, stopping any competition. So, you know, they talk about, oh, we need more regulations. Well, who writes these regulations? Well, of course, it's the people at the top of the game in that industry, which usually regulate it to make it so hard for little guys to jump in and compete with them. And that really isn't a free market. That's not capital. That's not competition. And so you really, people need to reevaluate what the heck capitalism means.
You know, Josh, we're going to have to do a whole show. In fact, you know, maybe a bunch of shows on just basically defining what capitalism is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally been totally manipulated, especially by the left, and the right, actually. And no one really knows what it is. All it is now is some thing that says, oh, greedy, like when someone says capitalism now, you conjure images of Coca-Cola, McDonald's taking over the world.
Greedy corporations.
But
also, I'd just like to point out one thing, is that the word capitalism, as I understand it, now I might be wrong, and if a listener wants to tell me I'm wrong, go ahead. As I understand it, the term capitalism was only made a popular term by Karl Marx. Because Karl Marx wrote Das Kapital, which was a critique of the economic system. But the word capitalism then became used by socialists ever since, but right. as a term of abuse. In other words, the word capitalism itself derives from a critique, and a very hostile one at that, of the system by someone who actually said that it is doomed. I do think that that is actually the pretty much the origin of the popularization of the term capitalism. It comes from Karl Marx and socialism itself. But I think we need to do a whole show on that and research that more. But, you know, I mean, we had mercantilism. We had concepts of the free market. Adam Smith wrote The Wealth of Nations. But, see, Karl Marx was one of these great systematizers. Karl Marx was a bit like Charles Darwin in that he set down a whole lot of ideas that came out of his head. And then everyone started to believe him as if he'd suddenly invented some new truth. Now...
Yeah. And also, I mean, yeah, that's a whole other story.
It's a whole complex topic. But the key thing here is to understand that what Naomi Klein is saying in this article is that the questions about climate change are not really about whether the scientific facts are proven or not. The questions are about what type of political ideology you have.
And that's interesting. If you go and I agree with it.
One branch, you'll believe one thing. If you go with another branch, you'll believe another thing. But then where do facts exist in all that? Like, where does science exist when facts are just tied to your which political group you align with?
Yeah.
Doesn't make a lot of sense. Right back after this break, we're going to get into that subject and we're going to get into a little discussion on the Occupy movement.
Corn and Bullion is a family-owned and operated business that has helped many families and friends in protecting their assets, and we would like to do the same for you. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer Patriot safes, ammunition, Berkey water products, gift certificates, wristbands, and our new silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and the Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 5. Visit us at CapitalCoinAndBullion.com or call 512-646-6440.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Welcome back to Truth News. I'm here today with Josh Jackson. Of course, my name is Hereward Fenton and you're listening to an Australian-made podcast, which has a few thousand loyal listeners and growing daily. And we really appreciate all the feedback we get. We really appreciate the Facebook likes that I get on the articles whenever I publish them. And just want to say that, you know, every time you send me an email, I read it. Sometimes I don't get back to people, and I'm really sorry for that. I find it hard to organize my time. But you know, everything that we, every contribution that we get from our listeners is extremely valuable to me.
And yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a currency, right? If you can't afford to send a bit of green our way, a bit of plastic, a bit of fiat currency or gold or silver even, send us some likes, silver. Some Facebook likes, you know?
We do accept gold coins. So, look, let me just continue. Let me just finish off with this subject of Naomi Klein. The article, as I said, is climate, capitalism versus climate. So the article really says it all. She is basically saying climate change denial, as she calls it. And if you read the article and you count the number of times she uses the word denialist and denier, it's absolutely staggering. I mean, she repeats the word denialist virtually in every paragraph. You know, she's clearly using language in a very, very lethal, poisonous way, right? And yet she seems like a nice person. You know, she seems like a nice person. Yet she writes this article that is full of venom. Actually, I have to say, Josh. Let me read you a couple of excerpts here. The deniers did not decide that climate change is a left-wing conspiracy by covering some covert socialist plot. They arrived at this analysis by taking a look at what it would take to lower global emissions as drastically and rapidly as climate science demands. They have concluded that this can be done only by radically reordering our economic and political systems in ways antithetical to their free market belief system. As British blogger and Heartland regular James Dellingpole has pointed out, modern environmentalism successfully advances many of the causes dear to the left: redistribution of wealth, higher taxes, greater government intervention, and regulation. Heartland's Bast puts it even more bluntly. For the left, climate change is the perfect thing. It's the reason why we should do everything the left wanted to do anyway. And I'm still continuing from her article here. Here is my inconvenient truth. They aren't wrong. She's acknowledging that, right? Before I go any further, let me be absolutely clear. Now she's turning back to the men in the white coats. This is really interesting. Okay, first of all, she acknowledges this incredibly blatant manipulation of a scientific issue for a social political end, right? But then she turns back to the men in white coats again. And she says, before I go any further, let me be absolutely clear. As 97% of the world's climate scientists attest, the Heartlanders are completely wrong about the science. For bland, blunt statement. The heat-trapping gases released into the atmosphere through the burning of fossil fuels are already causing temperatures to increase. If we do not, on a radically different start on a radically different energy path, by the end of this decade, we are in for a world of pain. Okay, end of story. She's turned back to the men in white coats. So, and this is what I find absolutely amazing, how these people do this. Because they keep swapping from saying, the men in white coats said it, the men in white coats are totally objective, they only care about facts, they've said it, we must believe it. But then they go back to this theme where they're saying, well, it's better if we believe it, because believing it makes us better people, creates a better environment, creates a better society, makes it more just. So, gee, isn't it just convenient that we believe it? But then you better believe it, because the scientists all tell us it's true. And then you look at these scientists, and most of the ones that are part of this, what she calls us the 97%, which, of course, is a completely phony number. But the ones
that... The 97%?
She says... 97% of the world's climate scientists. But then climate scientists are only a tiny percentage of scientists generally, and atmospheric scientists, a large proportion of them don't agree. But of course, climate scientists are all activists. That's how they got their jobs. You can't be a climate scientist and be a skeptic. To be a climate scientist, you are part of the climate change lobby. And there's the problem. I mean, there's one of the aspects of this problem is that we're being told to trust the science because science only cares about truth, it only cares about fact. But then it's quite clear, and she admits it, that the science is being used for a socio-political agenda. And then if you do some more reading, you'll find that these scientists themselves well, some of them work for the World Wildlife Fund, some of them work for Greenpeace. You know, they've all got financial connections with groups that are paying them to have a certain point of view. I'm not saying all, but a large number of them, right? I mean, a large number of these so-called peer-reviewed articles which appeared in the IPCC's reports came from activist organizations. But of course, you know all that, and I know our listenership knows all that. But the point is, there is a complete contradiction in logic, a failure of thinking. And Naomi Klein, for all that we, you know, must think, you know, she's a great person because of what she's written and the positions she's taken on some social justice issues, she has really lost it, mate. She's really lost it. She's lost her way as a human being.
Well, what really I find interesting is that the book could have been quite an interesting because I do agree a lot of the more free market individualists tend to disagree with man-made global warming theory, and a lot of the leftists tend to agree with the theory. So there is a definite correlation there, and it would have just been interesting to objectively and subjectively just look through the whole concept and why this is and why some believe that and why others believe. But she's coming at it from a purely one side, like it is true. And let's see why the capitalists are wrong.
Yeah, so she's not looking at the evidence. But this is what we've seen with other things that we talk about on Truth News, right? When you have an authoritarian debunking kind of mentality, they never look at the evidence. They only use the rhetoric that assumes that the evidence is wrong. And they just don't engage with it.
Well, I find it interesting that Naomi Klein came out with the shock doctrine during the Bush era. Nothing's changed under the Obama era, and now she's coming out with this sort of book. It's quite interesting too.
Well, of course, she's allied with the progressive left, as they like to call themselves. And this is part of their, as she calls it, communitarian worldview. The communitarian worldview sees carbon taxes as an inherent good. They're good in themselves. Mm-hmm. They also want to bring in a Robin Hood tax. Now, Josh, we don't have much longer to go because we're going to break, and I'm going to be playing a segment from the man I interviewed on Skid Row about Occupy Sydney. We haven't had a chance to talk about the Occupy movement. It all popped up while you were away. Yeah. Just give me in the next few minutes your take on the Occupy movement, totally fresh. We have not discussed this off mic at all. Go for it.
Go. So, you know, I like to I saw Adam Kokesh do a really good thing about Michael Moore. You know, they talk about this 1% and they boo Fox News out and stuff, and so Fox News are awful and all that. Yeah, fair enough. But they booed him out, yet Michael Moore is held up like some sort of saint in the Wall Street movement anyway. And he is, if you really take, you know, 300 million or whatever, the you can go and take the numbers off the FBI website for the population of America. Then you take the amount of people there divided by what people earn and all this sort of stuff. And he did a great video, and I'll link to it on the show notes. It really cuts down to how much a one percenter is earning generally. And Michael Moore is in the upper echelons of the one percenters.
Right? He sure is, yeah.
And he put a really good little call out there saying, hey, if you really want to do something for these people, for the 99%, how about you donate your money to some to the movement or to you know, some other parts of the thing? But no, it's you know, they all sort of it's this schizophrenia that I see with the Occupy Wall Street movement, and that's why a lot of people, like, sometimes I'll like the movement, sometimes I'll think, what the hell are they
doing? Josh, we're going to have to go to break.
Schizophrenic.
We're going to have to go to break. We're going to play Eddie Vedder, Long Nights Into the Wild, in the break. See you next week, Josh.
See you later, mate.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Could printed books soon be a thing of the past? Apparently, a lot of kids these days are exchanging book pages for web pages. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back to tell you what's happening to literacy.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Forget books and magazines. A recent study by the UK's National Literacy Trust found that text messages are the number one reading material for kids today, and numbers 2 and 3 are email and Facebook. That's not surprising, since cell phones and computers outnumber novels in most homes. We adults are obviously not setting a very good example. Of course, text messages are not known for their literary quality or for their outstanding spelling and grammar. In fact, they're some of the worst writing around. So if you want your kids to develop basic English skills, tell them to unplug from Facebook and turn off Twitter, then hand them an old-fashioned book. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. Well, for the next half an hour, I'm going to bring you an excerpt from this morning's Radio Skid Row interview that I did with Steph from Occupy Sydney. And of course, I had Steph on a couple of weeks ago, and he gave a quick synopsis of what he saw happening in the Occupy movement. And he came on Radio Skid Row to give us more information and some revelations about what he thinks is going on. So here we go, Radio Skid Row.
I've got a special guest on the line, Steph from Occupy Sydney. How's it going, man?
How you going, sir? Good morning.
Good.
Morning, Steph. This is Herowood.
Hi. How you going, sir?
I'm great.
Thanks, thanks, Steph.
No worries, mate.
Cool. Now, Steph, we were talking yesterday on the phone, and of course, you've been with Occupy Sydney from the beginning.
Yes.
And I had you on my show for a brief interview a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
I'll just give you the floor, because I'd like you to just tell everyone, you know, what you were telling me yesterday, and you know, and then we'll have a discussion about it. So over to you.
Okay, just again, these are my perceptions. I don't belong to any political group or any political affiliation. I have been waiting for this awakening most of my life, so I have given it a lot of energy. I've just noticed, basically what I've noticed is a microcosm of how any socialist or communist society works. Basically, all the men have gone out of this movement. Anyone who knew anything about fractional reserve banking, the Federal Reserve, the IMF, the World Bank, they're all gone. So basically, even though these people promised us that they wouldn't try and co-opt and take over this movement, they've used all the usual tactics, the backroom dealings, the things that I hate that politicians do. These are the techniques that they've used to usurp this movement and make it irrelevant in such a quick time, where in 4 weeks, in Australia at least, it's become just another little in-faction, green, left, socialist, alliance, loving group
So what you're saying is it's lost the inclusiveness of really being, really sort of tackling big problems that are a lot of groups
back to
have.
The little things of my rights and your rights and these rights, and we're not talking about the banks, we're not talking about the WTO or the IMF or anything that's going on in the world. We're just stuck in this little, our own little bubble. And it's just the innovation gets killed. Any independent spirit, anyone who's an innovator or a creator gets pushed out.
How does that happen?
And we go back to the rule of mediocrity.
Can you describe how this happens? How do people who have got individual thoughts get kicked out?
Some groups meet outside of this space, decide what they're going to bring to the General Assembly, make sure they have the numbers there, block anything that anybody else suggests, and then gleefully laugh about it. And then once all their points of order have been talked about in the GA, literally sometimes they just get up and go, therefore crushing the process of the GA and finishing it right there once the things that they wanted to discuss have been discussed and passed.
Now, Steph, did you go to the first meeting? I think Anastasia went. It was in Sydney. This is Sydney Occupy. We were sort of putting it on the show. It was going, what's going on? There's a media blackout, you know, when it was happening over in New York.
Yes.
And then next minute, our lovely show, Democracy Now!, started pushing that one. And then we found out, and I said, well, we'll occupy Bond Street. You know, that's a good place to start off. And then we found out there was a meeting. Now, this meeting that Anastasia went to, she gave us a report. Were you at that meeting?
No, sir. Oh. No, sir. I actually work full-time, 60 hours a week. So I took a week off, the first week off, when we were actually occupying.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, I've been working and going as when time allowed me, yeah?
Mm.
But I have been there almost every second day and at all the demos, and I do go there and give them as much time as I can outside my work days.
So you're saying that it's been occupied by certain groups?
They really can't help it. It's in their DNA. The thing that they've managed to prove to me is that they're more annoying than Christians, more sanctimonious, more holier than they are, more judgmental, more willing to beat you over the head with their reality.
Mm.
I haven't seen them engage with people, not from the Occupy movement, but the people that were not affiliated, actually discussed with the general population with an open heart and an open mind, and were having a conversation with the people that were passing by, the people that work in these offices.
Mm.
The other half of it is there's no communication. There's only the hammer getting put on the head to bludgeon someone into submission.
Mm-hmm.
And people notice that, and they actually just are revolved by it and walk away.
Okay.
So, but genuine conversations with open hearts and open minds to get the 99% on our side, they haven't been doing that. And I'm really sorry to have to say this stuff, but again...
Well, no, you're just saying...
I've waited 4 weeks to have guaranteed proof of what I'm saying because they promised us that they wouldn't do this.
Now, have you talking to... So you've left the Occupy Sydney. How long ago was that?
No, I haven't left, sir. I'm just here to give you guys information that might not know what the ins and outs of it are happening. I'm not leaving this. Like, they've managed to push everyone away, but I'm actually stronger than that. And I'm smarter than them, so...
So where would you like, Steph, for the Occupy movement to go? Because a lot of people are saying they don't know what they're doing. This is mainstream news.
No, that's... Listen, me personally, I wanted to go there to support Occupy Wall Street. That's my number one objective by being there.
Yeah.
So anything that's coming out of there, and the only thing that these guys could agree on weeks and weeks ago was that we reject all politics of all stripes.
Mm.
All isms have failed. So when you're coming here and this movement is supposed to support Occupy Wall Street, you're spitting in their face by coming there with all your preconceived ideas.
Mm.
And not only that, but actually having the temerity to think that as a 20-year-old kid, you know more and everything, and you're never wrong. So we had some woman... walk past there with investigate 9/11 truth. Mm. So this young socialist gets up and goes, get fucked, you conspiracy theorist. Mm. Like, I don't know anyone that believes in the official story anymore. Not even my dogs believe in the official 9/11 story. But here's this kid who thinks that he knows better than everybody else. And all I said to him, I didn't admonish him. I said, just listen, mate.
Did you bash him?
Keep your heart open. Keep your mind open. What you believe at 23, at 30, you will look back and laugh at it. So I didn't judge him. I just said, mate, just keep your heart and your mind open. So this is what I'm asking. Because this is what this movement needs.
It sounds like from what you're describing, and this is what I thought too, is like the establishment left basically wants to own it. And of course, Noam Chomsky came out last week and stood there on the steps of the town hall for a photo opportunity. And there's some great things about Noam Chomsky. I'm not a Noam Chomsky hater.
Exactly.
But the point is, as we know, he doesn't want to look at some things. You know, he said, "Who cares? Who cares if 9/11 was an inside job? Who cares who killed Kennedy?" Well, I care. I care who killed Kennedy. I think it's important.
When you say the left side as well, hopefully we have Michael Parenti in the next couple of days. Now he's right into the left side, but for the workers and stuff like that. Now he questions conspiracy theories himself and asks the question. Do you know what I mean? Which Chomsky doesn't, because I'll tell you one thing, right?
Yep.
Chomsky is an established university person. When you're an established university person, indoctrinated in a system of someone else's theories and other things like that, when you can join the dots later, because when you get your PhD, you're actually virtually going out doing someone else's theory.
Yes.
Right? Now, the fact is that his establishment, and then I'd say Parenti, who comes from working class, has a look at it in a different perspective, because you do come from the poorest of the type. Now, he mentioned about 1%ers a long time ago and what's going on. Now, I know there's certain movements that go in there and promote themselves. They've been doing it for years, and that's what happens. And the trouble is with all different types of factions or groups, like any factions or groups, everyone wants to sort of put in their ideology and say, well, this is how it is and this is how it is. And it's
right.
And if we all hold hands and look, I've had youth climate kids have attack at me, you know what I mean? I question the fact is like, well, how about if the other scientists say that climate change didn't work? And they went, you can't do that. And I said, of course I can't. This is a different thing, yeah. Wait till we have an earthquake, then we can work our things out and see if the
Chief, I think we need to change the discourse, because the whole concept of being labelled a conspiracy theorist, that's a Hollywood invention.
Well, it's a RAND corporation.
Mel Gibson. I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I only believe in two things.
No, it's been a while.
One is two, and you can't defy the laws of physics.
Look,
so whatever you're telling me, no matter what political stripe, no matter what story you are, I'm going to take all the politics out of it, and I'm going to say, does this make mathematical sense, and does it comply to the laws of physics? When we look at the history like that, then we find out that all these things that are supposed to be conspiracy theories are the exact opposite. They're realities. So some guy the other day was on your show, and he was saying that whoever doesn't believe in carbon, in climate change, is a denier. Now, that is such a Nazi thing to do, to label someone as a denier. It's like almost the association is with a Holocaust denier. That's why they're using the word. Now, if you believe what Al Gore tells you, and if you believe what the International Panel for Climate Change tells you, that are getting all the money from the 1% to tell us this shit, then I got stuff to sell you. Come to my house, man. I'll sell you bloody thin air.
And we'll be right back after the break with a continuation of this interview from Radio Skid Row. And you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia.
City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who is on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, is that why we got the page to not come in today, end quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they'd been in an all-night stakeout, or that they'd been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning? And if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the world? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
At HempUSA.org, we offer chemical-free products to people around the world, detoxifying, self-healing, while rebuilding the immune system. We urge our listeners to please consider our largest-selling product, Microplant Powder. Our microplant powder is rich in silica and probiotics to help rebuild the immune system and to create a healthy stomach flora. Microplant powder is excellent for daily intake and is perfect to add to your storage shelter. We urge our listeners to please visit us at hempusa.org. And remember, all of our products are chemical-free and healthy to eat. We constantly strive to give you the best service, highest quality, and rapid shipping anywhere. And we offer free shipping on orders over $95 in the U.S. Please visit us at hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. That's 908-691-2608. See what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you at hempusa.org.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Welcome back to the show. Today I'm bringing you an interview from Radio Skid Row on the Occupy movement.
That's it, man. Carbon on. Actually, you know the guy from who put the Climate Gate scandal out. The emails was from Australia,
right?
Yes, I did know that, sir. I did know that
he was from Australia. So it was interesting to say that.
It's hard to keep up with the lies that these people are presenting to us.
Well, you have to lie. That's how you make money. You can never make money telling the truth. If you're going to tell the truth, you cannot make money. That's the situation.
That's where I always take it down to. Who's paying your bills? If I can trace back money to the 1%, whatever institute is giving you the money to promote your ideas, your social engineering theories or your scientific theories, then we know whether you're part of the elite or not. Now, if you're risking your life and limb and your career, like the architects and engineers are, to say about something that this doesn't make sense, then I will give you the benefit of the doubt first. Before I give someone who's entrenched in the machine and he's making a living out of telling us this stuff, yeah?
Well, it's tenocracy. I've gone down this theory that it could be all about tenocracy. It's about the energy certificates and everything else. And
I've always called it an emission trading scam.
Yeah.
And when our politicians aren't paying attention to Europe and what's happened and how many scams there's already been, there was already a guy in Australia who set up an office. And was trying to sell carbon credits, and he got shut down real quick. So, you can't tell me from one side that you care about the environment and then allow multinationals to come and frack the hell out of us.
Well, that's exactly right.
You can't hold those two positions at the same time unless you are a psychopath.
Yeah, exactly. That's the biggest question. Can I say this? But just for the Greens and all that, and anyone who's an environmentalist, the fact is that they're fracking or they're exploring and going to frack, and then you're worried about climate change. I'll be worrying about what machines are going into your land here in Australia more than hot air, because the fact is that they are cracking the earth underneath.
Sure.
And they are actually destroying the water aquifers. They've even put on record these crazy goddamn bloody corporates are saying, well, we don't know what we're sticking in there. We don't know if it could. Well, they can't say it contaminates. They have no idea. They just want to get that little piece of gas and take it out and sell it. Now, if you're an environmentalist, you should be out there actually doing everything in demand. You should be going down to Parliament House right now and stopping this, because the fact is...
These are the final stages. If they poison our water, they already own our seeds. Monsanto has already poisoned our seeds. Coke already owns all the water. We're
what?
Going for perpetual war.
What do you mean? Well, sorry, Coke owns all the water.
Well, not all the water, but it has been going around buying water in the third world and buying factories near rivers.
Right.
And then fencing the river around and then not letting the locals, damming it, and then not letting the locals use the water that they've been using for thousands of years.
Well, that's like going to a rave party in an island. This guy went to a rave party in Ireland, and guess what? The organisers turned all of the taps off and then charged everyone for a bottle of water for $15.
Go.
So everyone was dehydrating, going, where's my water?
Yeah.
Anyway, so sorry, that was a bad analogy.
This is the way I see it. We're going for perpetual war. These people need perpetual war. We have abstract mathematical theories that run our economies that don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
When you read Stephen Keane, the professors, and all these stuff who predicted these things, then you have poison food,
yep.
Poison water,
yep.
And now you're sitting there talking to me about your individual rights. If we don't fight these four fronts, then refugee rights, indigenous rights, gay rights, women's rights, all these things are all part of that. So if we sit there and still individually try and fight for our rights, that's what they've been doing to us for 50 years.
But what's really interesting, Steph, is like what you say sounds like total good sense, right? But what you're saying is that in the General Assembly, in the Occupy movement, your point of view and the way you think is not appreciated. And there's this collective thing going on. And I just want to read a quote here that I've got from Naomi Klein. And it says here, this is from an article that she wrote recently. She's a you know, left-wing, progressive type person.
Yes.
Those with strong egalitarian and communitarian worldviews, marked by an inclination toward collective action and social justice, concern about inequality and suspicion of corporate power, overwhelmingly accept the scientific consensus on climate change. On the other hand, those with strong hierarchical and individualistic worldviews, marked by opposition to government assistance for the poor and minorities, strong support for industry, and a belief that we all get what we deserve, overwhelmingly reject the scientific consensus. Now,
yes.
that is an amazing admission from her that, and the way I read this is what they're basically saying is that your belief about climate change is to do with your beliefs on a political and ideological level. Your position on climate change is driven by your ideology far more than it has anything to do with science.
Yes, that's true. That's true that this thing has been driven by ideologies and not science, because the sciences that are outside the mainstream and aren't getting funding, they're saying that the numbers have been cooked.
Well, that's right. That's
they're saying that the way they've done this modelling is wrong. So let's put it this way. I start the conversation with, like, let's just assume that everything that Al Gore says is true, even though he stole footage from from a Hollywood movie to show the melting ice caps. Let's say the international panel, everything every one of these people says is true.
Sure.
All right. By you not coming out and saying, let's stop war, let's stop BP, let's stop Monsanto, you're not an environmentalist. By you coming out and telling me, I'll agree that everything that these people say is correct, what are they suggesting that we do to fix this?
Well, they want a Robin Hood tax,
they're just creating,
right?
Another bloody trading scheme.
That's
another commodity that the 1% is going to be able to trade, and we just like our food, it might start going up 50%. Now, if these people have said to me, look, we're destroying the environment, there's climate change, and we need to stop manufacturing weapons today, we need to stop poisoning our water today, we need to even as painful as it is, we need to start readjusting our petrochemical technologies to do something else, then yes, I would go, well, you're on the money. But what you're suggesting to fix these problems is bullshit.
Well, Well, it's a collectivist ideal, though, isn't it? It's like pay taxes to the state and then trust that the state actually represents the interests of the people. But the whole point about the Occupy movement originally was that they're aware that government and corporate power had become combined and had become, toxic, right?
Yeah,
so it seems like they've gone completely off the track.
That's half the people there. They understood that. The other half of people are just waiting for their opportunity to get into the Greens Party,
right,
to get into the Labor movement, and then they forget all this stuff.
Well, they should
conveniently allowed themselves not to be arrested, while everybody else who was an independent thinker has been arrested, and therefore it's hard for them to
be around us anymore. That's a really important point.
If they get arrested again, then they're in big trouble.
So
they conveniently didn't sleep there, didn't clean up after themselves, didn't get arrested, and therefore they're the only ones left that are not legally bound to not being there.
So the ones that got arrested were the ones that were the free thinkers. And
exactly,
the ones
that
didn't get arrested...
The action and occupied that building this week.
Yeah.
They're the real people.
Okay.
Everyone's real, but yeah, okay.
No, sorry, mate. Sorry, bro. It's early in the morning. I'm not... Yeah, it's just out of sheer frustration because...
Yeah, I can imagine...
In the other countries, they're actually... In Spain, they're already putting a constitution together that they're going to try and get passed.
All right.
In the States, they're getting the Marines involved. It's becoming... When you look at the States and you see the footage, you don't see any political groups. You don't see their signs. You just see normal, everyday people, working class, people that are losing their pensions, and, yeah, students who don't have a job. But it's not just this little clique of university students that think that they know everything else, even though they've never had a mortgage. They've never had to work a 60-hour week with their hands to the point where they're broken. So these are the things that I had to get out there to you guys after 4 weeks of letting it go and saying, all right, you promised us that you wouldn't try and co-opt this. Let's see how quickly this is going to disintegrate into some silly little game now.
Interesting. No, thanks. Look, thanks, Steph, for coming on and giving us that. So I guess you're not going to go back into it.
No, I'm going to go back into it, mate.
Good.
This is too important.
Great.
But I would like to put out there, if there's actually kids out there, like the skaters, the graphers, the people that know about this stuff and
the major polluters too.
Yeah, don't kind of go with the general line of thinking. We need to get those people in there.
But also truthers, 9/11 truthers. If you're
don't get them in there. They'll molester you. They'll attack you. They'll virtually they'll put a bullhorn right next to your ear and just shout you out. I know those sort of people.
Yeah.
But they really should join. And also the carbon protest people should go down there as well.
Oh no, don't get them. They're crazy people. I met them one time. They were complaining, and that's all right. I just
because they were real people. If you noticed the demonstrations, there weren't any. They were real working class people at those demonstrations.
Yeah.
Well, there were, and there was also some renter crowds that I went to. I went to one in Port Macquarie, and I was quite disgusted that these renter crowds had come on buses and started attacking another group who was complaining about the carbon tax as well.
Yes.
And these people who would do it, these renter crowds, these, I don't know where they came from, if they came out of Alex Jones, what's his name?
Alan Jones
studio. And I said, look, these people have they're with you, but they're saying that the Queen, it goes through the oligarchy, the Queen, you know. No. And I just went, well, all right, well.
Oh, so they were pro-monarchy, were they?
Yeah, pro-monarchy. Mm-hmm. And so when they're pro-monarchy, they just, you know what I mean? I mean, they're all, some people get right on the thing, but they just have their other beliefs, you know. You gotta
Well, obviously, they haven't heard Prince Philip say that, if I could come back, I'd come back as a virus so I could wipe out half the humans.
Yeah, well.
And obviously, exactly. They don't know about what these people are planning for us in the guise of environmentalism. They don't know that these movements started out in the 70s with the same 1% money, and these guys are always willing to wait 20 years to become adopted by the mainstream.
That's all we've got time for today, folks. Hope you enjoyed that, and I look forward to your company next week on TNRA. See you then.
The Bible remains the most popular book in the world. Yet countless readers are frustrated because they struggle to understand it. Some new translations try to help by simplifying the text, but in the process can compromise the profound meaning of the scripture. Enter the Recovery Version. First, this new translation is extremely faithful and accurate, but the real story is the more than 9,000 explanatory footnotes. Difficult and profound passages are opened up in a marvelous way, providing an entrance into the riches of the Word beyond which you've ever experienced before. Bibles for America would like to give you a free Recovery Version simply for the asking. This comprehensive yet compact study Bible is yours just by calling us toll-free at 1-888-551-0102 or by ordering online at freestudybible.com. That's freestudybible.com.